This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
To another fine evening filled with lots of technology bites.
Nice job.
And hilarity will ensue.
We're so funny. Gosh. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And Dwight Silverman is not with us tonight.
He got booked. Wasn't that booked into something? Was it a jail or?
Yeah, well, he's at Mac Camp. They're fitting him for his faux black turtleneck and
jeans and sandals. And he's gonna come back and he's gonna go, I'm Flicted. And Barrett, he's gonna go, and one more thing, I'm Dwight.
Yeah, you wouldn't understand it, but I'm Dwight Silverman.
He'll come back and be the I Dwight.
The I Dwight. Actually, Dwight has he felt so unclean after buying a Mac that he's that he's gone home. He's taken the evening. He's taken a few weeks off to write a book on Windows Vista.
Locked himself away.
On his MacBook. Yeah, actually, Dwight is co-author I guess it might even be a dummy's book. I'm not positive on that. But he's writing a book.
It was a Peach Pit book, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a book about Windows Vista. So how to use it, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, wasn't it how to switch from Vista to a Mac?
Yeah.
How to run Vista on your Mac, I think that's what it was.
That's what he's going to, like, secretly put in there while nobody's looking. But I hear that he's got a cleansing ritual that he has to go through any time before he starts to write on the Mac about Windows.
Yeah. So anyway, Dwight is on hiatus for a little while. Chances are he's not even listening in, so we can just have even more fun at his expense. But we have the regular cast of characters here otherwise, including Groovehouse, the master of IRC ceremonies out in the lobby, with Jennifer the intern out there taking care of all of your calling into the radio show needs. One of my coworkers has decided to pimp the show to all of my coworkers who I've kind of kept it a secret from pseudo-successfully for the last 11 and a half, 12 years or whatever. And so anyway, I'm apparently going to have some coworkers listening tonight, and potential prank calls will come in. So we'll see how good a job Groovehouse does spending
on. You've been outed to your coworkers?
I have. I have been outed to my coworkers. And, of course, you know, whenever somebody, I don't know what it is about people finding out that I have a show, but the first thing that comes to mind is, how can we prank him? We're going to call in and prank your show. And I don't think we've had a very good prank. The best pranks are the ones that you don't even know they're a prank. There's probably been a bunch of them.
Missed all those because I didn't know we had any pranks lately.
Oh, we haven't had any pranks in a while. But and like I said, unless we just don't know it. And then it was a really good prank because we never guessed it.
Apparently, none of the pranks were Y2K compliant because I think that probably it was before then that we had the last really good prank call.
Yeah, we had back when the 2600 hackers were threatened to reroute our calls to the zoo or something. Anyway, we're glad you could be with us tonight. We're going to be with you until 10 o'clock. You can visit us on the World Wide Web at geekradio.com. There you can join up on the IRC if you're so inclined. We have a web client that will let you do that inside IRC. If you know how to use IRC, you can use your favorite IRC client, Internet Relay Chat client, and join Pound Tech Bytes after you go out on the server irc.cuckoo.com. Looks like we've got Ophelia in London and Bill in Germany on the IRC. So we've got, you know, that little English channel.
International flavor.
Yeah, the international English channel rivalry going on. Bill's going to go across the channel and punch Ophelia, and then Ophelia's going to, you know, call us to go kick his butt. So we've got the IRC thing going, and you can join that if you like. You can email me, jay@geekradio.com. The phone number is 713-526-5738, and even I looked up at the number on the wall, so I don't know what's wrong with me tonight.
You're sitting in my seat, actually. We're
is
all shifted, yeah, now that Dwight's gone.
Now we're spread out because there's no Dwight, and Barrett has taken this opportunity to move as far away from me as he possibly can. So, all right, so anyway, it's going to be a great evening, great show, and we hope you'll stick around. If you want to participate, the phone lines are open. We're going to do the news first, but after we get through with the news, we'll come back to your calls. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. And now we'll just point at Flictive. Flictive will push something, and this will happen.
It's the Technology by Tempo Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay, well, this one I got some information on it from Dwight, so it's sort of a homage. Actually, he mentioned it in his tech blog. I found it elsewhere. CompUSA is going to close more than half of their stores nationwide. They currently have 225 stores. They're going to close 126 of them. So they're going to get a little smaller. The Dwight part is that he found out which stores in Houston were going to stay open, and apparently the two stores in Houston will be the one in the Galleria area and the other one in Royal Oaks Village on Westheimer. Everything else, Sugarland, Webster, Willowbrook, and North Houston, will launch liquidation sales and are expected to close by the end of May. Now, here's the thing for our listeners, since you're smart. When they first start their liquidation sale, or actually if you're going to go to CompUSA, the one that's going out of business, know what it is you're kind of looking for, what kind of things you might be interested in, and understand what the prices are. Because people go to these deals, and what happens, the first thing they do is take everything off of being on sale and set it at, like, the suggested retail price. And then they say 10 to 30% off, and they take 10% off that price, which is higher than you would have gotten, you know, the week before they close, you know, before they started the going out of business sale. So you end up paying more money for the same stuff than you could somewhere down the street. So if you're going to go and do that, know what it is you're looking for. Know what it's really worth and what you expect to pay for it. Don't just get caught up in the deals and start loading your cart up with stuff thinking that you're just like getting a raging deal. Because at least the things I've read on other stores in the past that CompUSA has closed down, the kind of general thing that I've determined from looking around is that the prices stay pretty high relative to local competitors all the way through, even to the end. So So you know that one. And, you know, hopefully you don't work for one of those CompUSAs, but I'm guessing you would already know that you won't have a job after May, one way or the other. So in other just excellent news, there's a new way for rootkits to show up on your PC. Hardware components can provide a way for hackers to sneak code onto a computer, a security researcher warned today. Every component in a PC, such as graphics cards, DVD drives, and batteries, has some memory space for the software that runs it called firmware. You've probably done firmware updates. Miscreants could use this space to hide malicious code that would load the next time the PC boots. John Heisman, research director at NGS Software, said in a presentation at the Black Hat DC event. So that would, you know, Black Hat event, they should pretty much have know where to exploit a machine. It's, you know, he says it's an important area and people should be concerned about it. Software security is getting better, yet we run increasingly complicated hardware. Unless we address hardware security, we're leaving an interesting avenue for attack. Malicious code delivered via the memory on hardware components poses a rootkit threat, since it will run on the PC before the operating system loads. This likely will hide it from security software and other protection mechanisms, he added. Such low-level malicious code is known as a rootkit. So, see, hopefully the hackers, you know, the Black Hat hackers won't follow the .com model and, like, give out free hardware with rootkits on it to compromise more machines. So, this guy, you know, is for real. He's researched it, and he focused on graphics cards inserted in the PCI Express or AGP slots on a PC motherboard. He found that it is possible to load a few K of additional code into the memory of such cards. An attacker could do this by tricking the user into opening a malicious file, he said, for example. Now, this isn't new, but it is important to understand that there's different ways to handle this stuff, and that ultimately what Heisman, the guy who brought this up, said that scanning the memory on PC expansion cards and other hardware components and analyzing what the code stored there does would be the way to get increased protection. Other security the industry has responded through the Trusted Computing Group and the Trusted Platform Module, which performs additional checks. However, this isn't on every PC, and its capabilities are not always used. Now moving on to some better news, I guess. Finally, a good story on digital rights management, perhaps. There is a bill in the House, which is a refreshing start on a long overdue amendment. You know, while the MPAA and RIAA have done their fair share of beating around the issue and insisting that DRM-laced content was the only way to go, consumers haven't exactly been thrilled about such limitations since day one. Let's see, Representative Rich Boucher, Democrat of Virginia, and John Doolittle, Republican of California, introduced a breath of fresh air they call Fair Use, F-A-I-R-U-S-E, and of course, you know, it's like Patriot and all these other deals. They must have, like, special staff coming up with, you know, names for bills that spell out something relating to the bill. So it's Freedom and Innovation Revitalizing U.S. Entrepreneurship. Get it? Fair, F-A-I-R, Use. Anyways, their main idea is to, quote, make it easier for digital media consumers to use the content they buy, unquote, by amending the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. You know, according to the duo, the DMCA simply, quote, goes too far by dramatically tilting the copyright balance toward complete copyright protection at the expense of the public's right to fair use. Wow, you've never heard us say anything about that on this show in the past week. So this is good. Boucher further substantiates his case for the most down-to-earth politician of all time by suggesting that if the DMCA remains unadulterated, quote, individuals will be less willing to purchase digital media due to the unacceptable restrictions that come along with it. So we will be keeping an eye on this little piece of legislation and certainly hoping for hoping for a positive outcome on it, it's time for the DMCA to be adjusted to make more sense. And so seeing them do that will be good for everybody. And now finally the cool new stuff. I've got two things this week. There's a show, I think it's out in Las Vegas, that's the Line Show, that's got different manufacturers like kind of releasing their broad lines of products. And Sony had a ton of stuff, and there were some others. Nobody had anything that was like all that earth-shattering, but if you go to like Gizmodo or Engadget or some of those, they'll have a ton of posts on the different cameras that that were announced and different products like that. But one that, and I don't think this was from Canon, but Canon is one of the ones on the Line Show, but they have a new feature they're advertising. Canon has invented what they call blink shot technology, which won't let you take a picture if your subject's eyes are closed. So apparently it somehow can detect, so that it can tell if everybody in the picture's eyes are open at the same time, and then gets the picture when they're open. So that could be a neat little feature, at least for, say, point-and-shoot type cameras. And then this one's probably a bigger new thing, and should be interesting. Hoping to get a jump on Google and other competitors, Adobe plans to release a hosted version of Photoshop, the image editing application, within 6 months, and that's according to the company's chief executive. The online service, that's what hosted means. They didn't do a good job of making that clear. It's an online service so that you could use a sort of light version of Photoshop online for free. It's part of a larger move to introduce ad-supported online services to complement its existing products and broaden the company's reach into the consumer market. That's Adobe CEO Bruce Chizen told CNET News. He also said Adobe laid the foundation for a hosted Photoshop product with Adobe Remix, a web-based video editing tool it offers through the PhotoBucket media sharing site. Like Adobe Remix, the hosted Photoshop service is set to be free and marketed as an entry-level version of Adobe's more sophisticated image editing tools, including Photoshop and Photoshop Elements. The revenue from the Photoshop service is envisioned to come from online advertising. So this could be very cool. The thing about it, the positive for it, is that there's a lot of times that people need to do very simple, basic things to a photo, but they don't have the software and they don't know what to go out and buy. You know, if you just need to resize a photo or do a little bit of this, a little bit of that to it, you know, tweak the colors or start playing with the Photoshop type stuff, this could be an excellent product and you see some ads. So it's going to be most interesting to see where things go in the future, because here's Photoshop going online somewhat, which may undercut the like lower priced competitors to Photoshop and may make more people move up to Photoshop. There's also, I mean, the Google stuff, the competition to Microsoft Office. I think that the interesting impact on the software business is going to be that a lot of people who may have just rushed out and bought the product before, whether it was Photoshop or Microsoft Office or whatever, may limp by with the online product and not have to ever spend the big money on the full suite, which I don't think will hurt Adobe as much, because you've got to have the serious stuff. If you're gonna do serious tasks, you can't squeak by with an online version. You're gonna need the real software. But Office, I think, is more threatened by it. So that's the news.
All right. Thanks for the news, Peter. How's the weather in San Antonio, by the way?
It's been very nice. You know, it's been weird because it actually gets cold at night. So the low will be like in the 40s, and then it'll be 80 in the day.
Wow.
So it's like Denver or something, you know, where the temperature swings from need a jacket to need shorts kind of thing.
Well, it sounds really good on the phone, by the way. It's been sounding really good having you phone in your part for the show. It just sounds
That's
awesome.
Good.
It's just, are you on the IP phone?
Yeah. I'm on, I'm on Time Warner's phone thing. I need to see about getting, if they put Skype on the computer that takes the audio feed, then I'm wondering if the sound quality might not be even better than sort of computer-to-computer Skyping it.
Interesting. All right. The phone number is 713-526-5738. If you'd like to dial in, we've got a fully open bank of phones with no callers on them, which is fine.
It's the whole online Photoshop thing. They're all just shocked and amazed.
I thought the Google Apps announcement was pretty interesting. I think they did that last week on Wednesday in the afternoon, like right before the show actually happened.
And then this guy from Microsoft came to my house, and suddenly I was too sick to do the show. But I got a new Zune and a copy of Vista.
And a weird, greasy feeling. 713-526-5738. If you'd like to be on the air, go ahead, flick it.
I was going to say, have y'all gone and looked at the Google Apps offering?
No, I mean, that's been out for a few weeks now, right?
A week. A week? Yeah, the collected package, I think, as far as I know, has just been officially announced for about a week, which is where, I mean, you can, small business, enterprise, group, family and groups, individuals, you basically sign up for $50 a year, and they give you a certain amount of space. They use, they use Gmail, they use Google Chat, they use Docs and Spreadsheets, they use a number of things for, like, online sharing, Google Calendar, and so you can have multiple email accounts. You can host your domain through them for your mail and stuff like that.
Is it all free?
I think it's free for individuals and groups. But I think for like small business or enterprise business, it's $50 per something. I'm not remembering off the top of my head.
I think it was $50 a year. I think you were right.
Yeah.
And imagine, though, you know, basically at some point that could turn out where they make more money than Microsoft does off of a copy of Office.
Yeah. I mean, and yeah, they're not having to ship any product or packaging or boxes or anything. And one of the really nice things, it's really kind of nice for collaboration where everything in there can be shared among the company. So you can have, you know, a spreadsheet that multiple people have access to. I know people were using Docs and Spreadsheets for that since it came out, which was a few months ago, where they have, you know, somebody in multiple cities, even if it's just, you know, a family that is keeping up with something family related with reunions or whatever, they use that as a central area to store that they can all go in, and it's through the browser, so you don't have to have any special software. You don't have to have Excel on your machine. You just do it through the browser. They can get into the spreadsheet, update, you know, whatever they have information, and somebody else in some other state can do the same.
Yeah, you combine something like that. Well, and yeah, the collaboration stuff, that's the other part. For small businesses that are remotely spread out, it means people in you know, far-flung places can collaborate on the same document.
If they travel a lot, you know, they can be in a hotel room, you know, accessing collaboration documents that are shared, being updated from multiple locations.
And you combine that with citywide Wi-Fi or with the internet available through cellular systems, and suddenly it starts getting real interesting. I think that this is one of those steps towards the future. The Google thing, it's sort of quiet, but I think but then that's sort of Google's way with a lot of stuff is quietly revolutionary, and
quietly,
I think it's going to have a big impact.
Quietly cataloging all of your digital data for future consumption, searches, and exploitations. 713-526-5738. Looks like we got some calls in the queue, so I knew that our listeners would come through for us and bombard us with questions about their technology. So, Barrett has his finger on the button. Who's up?
On length of hold, we've got Chuck.
Hi, Chuck. You're on the air.
Hi, Jay.
Hi.
I've had my computer for maybe 3 years. It's a desktop, and it's got Windows XP. And I think it's got what you guys talk about, plaque.
Plaque?
Yeah, the cyber plaque that gets on the hard drive. And so I'm going to reload my operating system.
Okay.
And over those 3 years, Microsoft has sent me a lot of updates and patches and stuff.
Yeah, so what'll happen is that you'll... well, first of all, do you have... Are you on high-speed internet?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a router?
Yes.
Okay, good. One of the last things you want to do is you know, bring up a Windows XP computer and it's... original configuration on an unprotected internet connection because it can get compromised in nothing flat. What you're going to do is you're going to get the operating system reinstalled on the computer, and then you're just going to go to windowsupdate.microsoft.com and start applying patches.
So I have to go there and ask them for them.
Yeah, they do that little scan. You know, you go to the website and it checks your system to see what the deficits are. And then it tells you what it's about to install, and then you just keep going back until it's done.
Got it.
And eventually, you know, you'll probably have to hit it two or three times and go through a few reboots, but eventually it'll say there are no more high priority updates. But on a high speed internet connection, the whole process will probably only take you about an hour.
Okay.
It's not bad.
No, not bad.
Not bad. And, of course, you know, since we're talking about you reloading your system, you've backed up your crucial... Are you planning to back up your crucial information?
Well, I have everything. I put another hard drive in the computer, and I have a ghost.
Okay.
That talks to that hard drive and tells it what's in there.
Okay, so you've ghosted your existing files over to the secondary drive?
Yes.
Okay, that's certainly a way to do it. You know, just want to make sure that you have all those files. Something you might consider is that if the all the files and stuff are already on the drive that's the primary drive for the computer, is that you could take that new drive and set it up as the primary drive in the computer and set your old drive up as a secondary drive. Then you have all the files. Install your operating system on the new drive, get that all configured the way you like it, and then just pull the stuff off the old drive. Is your new drive bigger than the old drive?
I don't know. This is probably okay. The same. I don't use very much of the drive anyway.
So. Okay. Well, at any rate, I mean, that's certainly the way you're doing it is fine if you do have everything backed up. Because the last thing you want to have happen is that you go through all of this and find out that you wiped out your data.
Yeah, I think maybe I'll put the real critical stuff on CD disks.
There you go. I mean, and what email program are you using?
Sometimes AOL and sometimes Internet Explorer.
Okay. Do you want to save your old email?
Yes.
Okay. You need to take a look at, I don't know how AOL backs up their mail if they keep all of that on the server. Do you use AOL's actual mail program or do you use Outlook Express or...
I don't know.
Well, the email, I'm just asking you this because the email is not always obvious. It's one of the things that people tend to lose more often than not when they reload their system. They lose all their addresses and they lose their email.
Okay.
So you have to actually know what mail program you're using. So you say you're using AOL.
Yes.
And Internet Explorer is a web browser. It's not an email program. So you say sometimes you use Internet Explorer for your mail, or you mean...
Oh, no, I don't get any mail there.
Okay, I didn't think so, unless you're going to a web-based mail program like Hotmail or something like that. But AOL is your primary email address?
Yes.
Do some Google search. I haven't backed up AOL email, but do some research on backing up your AOL email.
Okay.
So that you have that, so that you can, you know, you may need a third, I don't know if you need a third-party program to do that.
It wouldn't be in the ghost copy.
Well, the ghost copy, how exactly are you doing the ghost?
Originally, I made a copy of everything on my drive, and then it updates automatically on Monday.
Okay, so it's backed everything up. It's backed up all these files, so it's backed up your entire directories and everything?
Yes.
All right, when you load on your new operating system, when you reload Windows XP, you're going to have to go to that ghost and selectively pull stuff out. You're not going to want, everything. Like, you're not going to want your the files for, say, all your old operating system files because you're reloading that.
Right.
So when you say you back up everything, I mean you backed up like your Windows directory, Everything, or
yeah, everything that's on the computer. It I think it does that initially. It just makes a copy of everything, and then it somehow knows what changes.
Right, exactly. The thing is that how are you going to get that data back into your system once you get it reloaded?
I'll probably have to call you.
Well, because you don't want to copy, if you've made a backup, if you've made a mirror or ghost copy of everything that's on your hard drive, that would include all the problems that you're having right now as well.
Correct.
So your operating system, all the registry entries and so forth. What you're going to want to do is you're going to want to reach into that ghost copy and selectively pull stuff back out, like your documents, your music files, your bookmarks, things like that.
Got it.
So what I'm suggesting, and when I talk about the email, is that you explore knowing where your email files are, for example. That's usually one of the hardest things to find, again, is how to restore your email and your addresses. So do a little research online and like, back up AOL email, just so you can, like, save that to a CD if you have to or whatever, so that you can bring that back easily once you get your system set up.
Got it. Okay, great. Thanks, Jay.
All right, Chuck. Thanks for your call.
Bye.
All right. Did you have something you wanted to add?
I was going to say, to prevent plaque buildup in the future, it's really important to floss. Really get up in there between, like, the registry keys. And it takes work, but, I mean, it pays off.
It does.
I think it does.
And, you know, the platters of your hard drive are you know, they're one of the most priceless and things and irreplaceable things you can have once they've been coated with your data.
I polished mine once, and they didn't really work out so well, but they look good.
Did they?
They look good, yeah.
Don't put it in the washing machine.
You don't have to polish all your... No, I was thinking of that that sign they have at dentist place, you know, dentist, a lot of dentists have.
Yeah.
You don't have to floss all your, just the ones you want to keep.
Ah, yes. Dental humor. I see where this is going now.
Very incisive.
Are there any molar jokes on that? Well, at least we think we're funny. 713-526-5738. Who's up next?
We've got Bruce.
Bruce, turn down your radio.
How'd you know I had it up?
Because of the weird...
magic.
I can see you, Bruce. And I really, that color is not flattering on you either.
Okay, tell me what color car I'm at.
I don't know, but I can tell that your number lock is stuck. Can you get that for me, please? It's kind of annoying.
Your car is kind of an off-white.
Yeah, you're right. It's the yellow.
There you go. You're a cabbie.
Yeah, this is the real cab driver.
So what can we do for you, Bruce?
I'm stuck on, my monitor is stuck on sleep, I guess. You know, it just, it pops, it comes on and goes right off. And then it looks like the numbers lock is... I don't know if that's related or whatever.
You say that again about your monitor?
It goes right to sleep when it comes on.
Okay, so it goes, it comes on and then it goes to yellow?
Yeah.
The power indicator. So it's indicating that it's not receiving much in the way of signal from your computer.
Now, when you say your number lock is stuck, when you hit it a few times, does it just stay lit? It doesn't, does never go off?
What that's telling me is that, you know, that the keyboard's getting bad signal from the computer and the monitor is not getting any signal from the video card.
Okay.
So are you not seeing anything? When you first turned the computer on?
No, it just, you know, and I had a very similar problem, and the only way I really was able to do anything with it was finally... shut it off, you know, shut it off completely, disconnect electricity and whatnot like that.
Right. And, so have you tried that with now?
Oh yeah, and I've done it many times.
Right. So I mean, what happens with most monitors is that when you turn them on, whether they're connected to a computer or not, the light will turn green.
Right.
And the monitor waits to see if it's going to detect any video signal.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't after so many seconds, then it goes into a standby mode. Then the light goes yellow. So what your problem sounds like to me is that the monitor, you turn it on, it's waiting to get something from the computer, and it's not getting anything. And the fact that your numlock key is stuck tells me that that the keyboard's not communicating with the computer properly either.
So this was one of those $2 used ones from the place out there on Harlem. And,
$2 used computer?
No, the keyboard.
Oh, the keyboard?
And the monitor is 5 years old, too.
Well, it's hard. I mean, right now it's not sounding like it's the keyboard or the monitor. It's sounding like it's the computer.
Okay.
When you turn the computer on, do you hear the drive spinning up? Can you tell if anything's happening?
Well, yeah. You know, sometimes it does more than that, but, you know. See, it's not connected to the internet.
Right.
That's
But I mean, right now it's just not really, the computer itself is just really not coming to life. It's not giving you anything on the display. Your keyboard is not responding. You're not. It sounds to me like the hardware, the actual computer itself, is failing in some way. Like either bad power supply, bad motherboard. How old is the computer itself?
I guess right around a year and a half, maybe. I'm thinking December.
Okay,
December,
so is it out? It's out of warranty, more than likely.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you have any recent electrical surges or anything?
I can't say I did or didn't.
But you say that the problem was when you had this problem before and you had to unplug everything. It was on the same computer.
Yeah.
I'd say you're probably going to end up having to take this to a technician and let them have a look at it, because right now the computer itself doesn't seem to be actually firing up. I can't hear it. I don't know what it sounds like, but you know, usually when you turn a computer on, you can hear the fan spin up on the power supply, and then you see the lights on the front of the computer indicate that the hard drive's being accessed, and you can hear. So most computers, you can actually hear the drive start to access, the read arms start to click and stuff. Are you hearing any of that?
Yeah, I think so, but I'm not at the computer right now.
Okay.
So,
well, I mean, if you're not getting anything to the display and the monitor, I mean, it could be a bad monitor, but the keyboard is telling me that it's actually the computer probably failed in some regard, and it's not something that you can. I don't know that you can easily fix it. I would say you probably need to, if the computer's worth anything, if you've got some money invested, it's only a year and a half old, I would take it down to some computer shop or another, get a technician to take a look at it, put it on the bench and see what's up. It might just be that it needs a new power supply, but it could also be that something else has failed.
Is that the battery y'all were talking about?
No, the power supply is the transformer or the electrical unit that provides power to the computer. It's you plug it in the wall, and it sends electricity into the motherboard. It powers up all of your drives and powers the computer. They're about $50 part.
It's not something a dummy could.
It's not that hard, but I don't know what your capabilities are. I've seen people, you know, with modest amounts of savvy be able to replace a power supply, but if you don't even know what it is when I tell you, I'm reluctant to say that you could do it. I mean, it's possible you could go buy a power supply and do it, but chances are, for the time, effort, energy, and risk, I would just pay somebody to, you know, a little bit of extra to have them, you know, take a look at it, take it down and have it diagnosed, spend the $50 or whatever they charge to diagnose it and see what's going on.
Okay, Doug.
All right, Bruce, thanks for your call.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, I mean, the fact that the keyboard responds different ways. When you turn your computer on, if you watch your keyboard, the lights, like the numlock and the caps lock and all of that, will light up. They'll all light up, and then they'll turn off depending on how you have it set to either have your scroll lock activated or not. But if the light comes on, stays on, you can't turn it off by hitting the numlock. Telling me that there's some kind of bad signal between the computer and the keyboard, and the fact that the monitor is not getting any display is telling me that there's a problem there as well. So it's all pointing at the CPU, and it could be something really cheap and silly, or it could be like the whole system is just fried. And sometimes you do just have to pay an expert to go have a look at it. All right, Technology Bytes, 8:39. Plenty of calls in the queue, so we're doing all right. We got one open line. Nope, that just got taken. So who's up next?
Next up, you've got Rick.
Hi, Rick. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Good evening.
Where's Dwight tonight?
Dwight is at Mac Camp. He's getting his faux turtleneck, and he's trying on different airs of superiority.
Saying things like incredibly stellar and isn't that super? Sure. And
I read in his column that he bought the Apple laptop.
Yeah, he's behind on his deadline for the book that he's co-authoring.
Oh.
And he is immersing himself. He needed the extra day to get caught up on the book on Vista that he's writing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's taken he blogged it too at his blog. If you go to blogs.cron.com/techblog, he wrote about the fact that he wouldn't be here.
Oh.
So he's taking about a month off.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, we'll decide whether or not we're going to let him come back.
Right. I hope you do.
Jennifer, the intern, will probably just take his place.
Yeah.
We need more knowledge.
Yeah. Well, we just need everybody to convert to Macs, and then the calls will dry up, the show will go away.
Why, you can't make it a Mac show?
Well, what are we going to talk about? Well, my Mac's working okay. Yeah, what about you? Yeah, we can talk about how clever their marketing is.
Right.
I don't want anybody to think that I'm anti-Mac in any way. I'm happy to talk about it. I'm surrounded by Macs tonight. All the time. But, you know...
And it's becoming more and more.
That's weird.
I'm happy. I mean, who knows? If I ever actually buy a laptop, maybe I'll buy a Mac.
Well, I predicted years ago that Gates was going to buy a Mac anyway.
Yeah.
Well, they did buy 10% of Apple at that one point. I don't know if they still own
That's
it.
That's like
at
someone
all.
Else walking into buying a Mac, though. So you got to look at it, you know, in perspective.
Well, I think the whole Mac Windows thing is going to be a moot point because Google's just coming out of nowhere. They're going to do it all. It's all going to be web-based applications. They're going to be operating system independent, hardware independent.
On a G-Book.
Virtual software.
It's going to have it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until we're there, I guess, is it okay if I ask my question now?
I suppose. If you must. We were having such a great conversation, but if you want to ruin the moment with a computer question, go ahead.
All right, here it goes. I built a Vista machine, and I have a home network. I have some XP computers, and I've got to actually have a Windows 98 computer that I kind of use as a server.
Okay.
Why is that funny?
I just found it whimsical that this, you know, the most outdated operating system probably on your whole network was server class.
Well, it's funny because it's a trooper, man. I mean, this thing's been alive for 7 years and hasn't died.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I just thought that was kind of humorous.
Well,
I'll keep my laughter to myself. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail your important computer question. It's not like I'm the one with a Windows 98 server, though.
Right.
Okay, so anyway, so you've got this home network. You've built a Windows Vista box.
Yeah, and the printer is hooked up to the Windows 98 computer.
Yeah.
And the other XP computers can print to it no problem.
Yeah.
Guess what?
Can't print to it from the Vista machine.
Well... I can. I went, you know, of course, I bought OEM version, so I get no support from Microsoft.
Right.
So I went to their knowledge base, and the only kind of help I found was where people posted their own solutions.
Right.
And there was three different ones, and I tried them all. One of them kind of works, but you have to wait like a half an hour for it to print out.
Nice.
Yes. So I was wondering, hoping that one of you guys, and that's why I was kind of hoping Dwight was there tonight.
Yeah, I wish he was here for this, too. I mean, it'll probably be in his book.
Yeah. I don't think so, because it's not on their website.
Well, you know, it's funny you should have this question, not funny in the sense that I'm about to give you a good answer, but funny because I had somebody email me about a very similar problem that they could print to this one printer, they could load it up the drivers on the server for Vista or whatever it needed, and everybody could print, but the Vista box couldn't print.
Right.
And what I asked this person was if they had tried connecting the printer directly to the Vista machine to see if it would print, and their response to me was that the printer was in a different room. And that's the last I heard from them. So
yeah,
they didn't even. It sounded to me like they didn't want to try troubleshooting. Have you tried connecting this printer to?
No, I know. You know that kind of question. I hope you don't mind a little criticism.
No, it's okay.
That question is kind of like when you call Microsoft and the first question they ask you is, or not Microsoft, say one of the internet companies.
Right.
And they'll ask you if you have your computer on or something like that. It's not a good way to put it, but it's a basic question.
It's a very basic question, but, you know, the answer to that question could tell us a lot.
Not in this case, because...
No?
No, only in this case, because I know that it sees the printer on the network.
You can browse to it.
Yes.
You can see it.
Yes.
You can send a print job to it, and nothing comes out.
Oh, no. No.
Except for this one workaround.
No, I get an error message.
You get an error message.
Yeah, and I Googled the error message, and that's kind of how I found the...
See, the reason I think the question is valid is because I'd want to know if it was an incompatibility between Vista and this particular printer, or if it's a network issue.
No, it's not a network issue. It's a deal where... I wish I'm not at my computer now. I'd tell you what it was.
Okay.
But it's something someone said that Vista deprecated the, oh gosh, and there's three letters, RPC or something like that.
A remote procedure call.
Yes. And something about Vista deprecated the communications or something like that. I don't remember the whole thing. So I know it's a Vista thing.
Well, I'm sure it's a Vista thing, but is it because it's a network resource or because it's just a print spool thing?
Yeah, that's what I see what you're saying.
See, the way that Vista is going to talk to that printer over a network is slightly different than how it's going to talk to that printer over a USB port or a parallel port. And I know Vista's very touchy with the firewall and what it lets you communicate to and how it runs things. You know, it doesn't give you I'm not super fluent in Vista, okay?
Right,
I'm going to tell you that right up front.
No, I've
got it on my computer at home, and I'm starting to dig into it.
Uh-huh.
And Vista is really finicky about what it wants to let you do or not. You know, like just copying something into the root directory, you can't do it.
Yeah.
So it's very finicky, so... I still say it would be curious to see if it would print if the printer was connected directly to it.
But you know it would.
So if it does, then what's going on with the network with Vista? And can you disable the built-in firewall in Vista?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Can you make an exception for this? I mean, I haven't delved into Vista deeply enough to know. I mean, I have had to go to remote desktop stuff and go in and make sure in the firewall that there are exceptions for certain applications. It seems to me that there should be an exception for the print spooler on the local network.
Oh,
but,
interesting. Yeah.
But you know, you might go and play with some of the firewall stuff, turn it off. You know, anything that might be, pointing to it being a network. The only other thing is, you know, with Windows, since the printer is connected to the Windows 98 machine, I know Windows 98 is very finicky in how you network to, you know, when you network a Windows 98 machine onto an NT-style network, you know how you've had to, like, create user accounts on the Windows 98 box to match the user accounts on your NT box, vice versa?
You mean as far as just to make sure the name is exactly the same?
Exactly, yeah. So, like, if you're logging into the Vista, you know, you're logging into the Vista machine with a user account that doesn't exist on the Windows 98 box or vice versa, so that's a potential.
No, I did all that. That's all
That's all
correct.
In place.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and maybe it's just the fact that it's Windows 98 running as your server. We could go back to what we were making fun of you about earlier as being the culprit.
Like I said, though, it actually sees it on the network, and then when I do the print job, I get an error message back. So.
Okay, and you don't happen to know that error message?
Yeah, it's 0x and then 50866. I Googled it and it doesn't really tell you much.
Okay. But you take that error that, well, I'll just tell you I don't have an answer for you. But the things that I would start to look at is I would say try connecting the printer to one of your XP machines.
Yeah.
And see if you can print over the network to that. Connect the printer directly to the Vista box. See if it can print there. Trying to isolate what is causing the breakdown, and it could be the fact that you're still using a Windows 98 machine in this environment. And I mean that sincerely, not just to pick on you. But,
no, I understand.
It may be that there is just some communication error between the Vista box and the 98 box trying to use that shared resource. It's just not working.
Yes.
Or it may never work.
Well, like I said, it actually does work.
It works... technically, but it doesn't work satisfactorily.
Correct.
And I don't know if you can get there or not. That's the question.
Well,
what do you got? Barrett's got the look on his face of intelligent recognition.
Okay, there is. If you go back in there and you go in with that, you know, 0x, you know, 0000, the number that you gave me,
uh-huh,
it's already lost to Google, and just search for that. You're going to want to look for the hit that comes up in the forums.microsoft.com.
Right.
There are about 3 or 4 posts down there. Two different things to try. The one that looks really promising is
LPP2.
Yeah, use the NetUse.
I did.
And that didn't work?
No, it does. That's the one that works, but it takes about, literally, okay, I'd say literally it takes about 10 minutes before it prints out.
Okay, and you've updated your drivers, right? You're not using just the built-in Vista drivers. That was the other thing they suggested, is kicking those out, going back to the XP drivers for that particular printer.
Well, it's an HP, and when I try to do that, it says that the HP's... I even went to HP's website to see if there's any new drivers, and there aren't.
Right. Can you use an old XP driver, though? Can you, manually uninstall the Vista driver for this?
You could force it. I would imagine that you could get the XP driver. I mean, Vista's right now is using a native driver, right?
I think it's actually using an HP driver.
Oh, okay. You installed it on the...
Yes.
Okay, and it was the XP driver?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that's the same driver that's on the Windows 98 machine.
Right, except that it's the Windows 98 version.
No, it's the same driver. Oh, I see what you're saying. You think it actually copies a different version off the same CD?
A lot of times there's different drivers for different Microsoft OS versions.
When you load drivers, there's oftentimes folders for the various operating systems.
Okay. Yeah, and it's possible that, I mean, there may be a problem with that driver in Vista.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Because Vista's so new, there's a lot of driver stuff.
Yeah, I would use the old driver, and I think that you just want to use the NetUse thing once. And then you go through and you do the add printer wizard. So it will take a long time, it looks like, for the first time. But what that does is it kind of paves the way for the add printer wizard to be able to find it.
Oh.
And then once you go in through the add printer wizard, it looks like it does it the right way.
Hmm.
So if you do a net use on the resource and then use the print wizard to add that printer,
and then load up, try and find some old XP print drivers for that HP printer, and then load that one. It'll still work under Vista, but don't use the one that ships for Vista, this default one, and don't use any by HP that are written for, you know, quote unquote Vista, because they might not be there yet.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll try that. Thank you guys for this. Can I ask you guys a general question about the fellow that called two before me about backing up documents and stuff?
Yeah.
I was wondering what the consensus is with you guys, because I've never heard you talk about it, how you actually approach saving data in terms of your operating systems. Do you guys run RAIDs, or do you just blow it off and just back up your main data, and then if it crashes, you just rebuild?
I've got about 80 Chinese kids in my basement that manually write everything out by hand, and I just go off that.
My philosophy on the whole thing is that I back up the files that I care about, email data files, docs, Excel, music files, that kind of thing, images.
Right.
And then when it comes, push comes to shove, I rebuild the system from scratch. Because by the time I'm ready to do an operating system reload anyway, my hardware, I'm probably going to get new hardware. But I just prefer to go with a clean install. I have one time actually just built my computer up the way I liked it, and then used Ghost to make an image of that base.
Oh.
And then I was able to just restore the computer from that Ghost image, but I still just backed up all my other files.
Yeah.
Like my Word documents and such like that. So that's the way I do it. There are other ways to do it, but I don't tend to do these system backups, because as the system deteriorates, the backup is just a backup of the deteriorated system.
That's true. And I like your idea about doing it when it's new.
On a professional level, I back up very differently than on a personal level.
Right.
On a personal level, I don't do any backups. because I like living life on the edge. And you know that plaque just collects. And, you know, sometimes what you need is a good hard drive crash to just get rid of all that stuff and start over.
Yeah, really. Once you've actually gone through an entire data loss, now I haven't done this myself, but I can speak for my users who have. It's a cleansing experience.
Yeah, it's freeing. It's very freeing.
Once you get through the grief and the frustration.
Right. Once you realize those contacts really weren't going to buy the product anyway, you need to move on.
Kind of like losing your teeth.
Yeah, kind of like that, old man.
Yes. Thank you, guys. I appreciate your input.
Well, I appreciate your call tonight, Rick. You're a great sport.
All right, you guys take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
And take that printer and hook it up directly and let us know what happens. All right, 713-526-5738. We had a few calls in the queue on hold that vanished. I got a question before we go to the next call. I don't see it. No, Gina Miller called. She used to be here at the station. And she took this is for Peter and for Barrett and for Flicted. So I need some help on this one. So maybe I can tell her what to do. She is taking over... her job has got a Macintosh that belonged to the employee that was there before her. And as I understand it, she was trying to turn this into her computer. So there was some file or folder or profile or something that was named for the original user of the computer. And she renamed that file so that it would be hers. So now when she starts the computer up, all the email settings and the desktop items and stuff are just gone. Does Macintosh have a user profile where you could have multiple users on a Macintosh and log in?
Yeah.
I wonder if she moved or changed her home account or something like
that.
Yeah,
she may have just changed the name and it may have created a new directory. But in the, it's Unix underneath. I'm pretty sure it puts it in home.
Yeah, they'll have to migrate
users.
It. And I can tell
that user
is
slash,
yeah.
And then basically you put in a name, like a full name, but underneath it actually creates a Unix 8 character or so account name.
How would she get back?
It'll be under slash users slash her username. If she just gets, like, the terminal, which is, it's in her, applications, utilities, clicks on the terminal, and if she just types in PWD, That'll tell her exactly where she is. And then the other thing she can do is she can go back a directory.
Something that she's going to be able to do. Is there any type of profile migrator? In Windows XP and Windows 2000, probably Vista, all your user profiles are saved under documents and settings and then that username. So if I create a whole new user on a Windows machine, I can actually use this tool and pull all the settings from another user into that user, like mail settings, desktop.
I think
documents.
You can. I think
it's
you can copy a profile.
CP space dash R. I think is the utility you use to copy it over.
No,
really,
I think in the GUI there is the thing is you need to have an administrative account. So, you know, you either need to log into that other account as that other account if it's had administrative rights, or you'll need to boot off the installation
OS. It doesn't seem to be prompting her to log in or anything. How do you enable user?
Oh, it goes straight into the account?
Yeah.
That's an option. If you go into the system preferences, there's an option there to say whether to automatically log on as the user or to force log on at the beginning. Because you can create multiple accounts.
IDs, right.
And once you get into the system preferences, there's a users tab on there, and that has all the profiles of all the users. And it's not quite as easy, like, if she wanted to move it as, I don't think, as just copying. Like in Unix, you could just go into the password file and change the name, and now that UID is now you. But Apple has added a lot of database-driven fluff on top of the Unix stuff. So you have to use, NetInfo to do some database changes.
How does she just undo what she did? I wonder.
I would just go back to that users directory and just have her take a directory and just look and see if there are two things that look kind of like her. See if they recreated the one that she thought she named to her.
Yeah.
And if there's the one that she named to her and the other one, it saw that it wasn't there, recreated it, and that's what she's writing again.
Yeah, I mean,
create a whole new account and go back in.
Probably.
Get it to where it forces you to log in. log in on the new account and then go and just either delete that one profile or be able to log into the old profile. Because I think you're right. I think what she did was she copied it, it created a new user profile, now it's just logging into
and
that.
And that new user doesn't have anything in the directory.
Right, but if she went back to where it was prompting or set it up to where it would prompt you for a login, she could log in as that user and then all the stuff would be there.
Part of my thing, though, is that, I mean, the way I'm going to drop to the command line, you know, I'm going to do an ls on slash users. I'm going to see what directories are there. Maybe I'll do an ls-l so I can see the modified date, so I can see if, like, what the dates are to see if one of them was created more recently or modified more recently. I mean,
chances are you wouldn't have gotten yourself into this bind.
No, actually, I did.
You did?
Yeah. somewhat similar, because I got a Mac at work, and I wanted to change the account, but I didn't want to create a whole new account. So I actually did that where, I mean, this is part of the reason I'm somewhat familiar with some of this is because I just went in and I was like, well, I'll just rename the Unix account. And it didn't really do everything I thought it was going to do.
All right. Well, it's just about a minute before 9 o'clock. And George, Dennis, Wes, and Don on hold. One more person looks like they're dialing in, getting put on hold. But before we go back to the phones here on Technology Bites, we're going to do the top of the 9 o'clock hour segment that we like to call Barrett Time.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
Interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett Time! Barrett Time! Barrett Time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett Time!
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. This Friday is the March 27, 2007 Geek Gathering. Wow. This is right out of the gate. Start totally over. This Friday is the March 27. Wow. Would someone say this for me? This Friday is the March.
March 2nd.
No, 2007 Geek Gathering is what I'm trying to say. It's all these numbers. Now with 70% less geek. Jay Lee, Dwight, Peter, and Groovehouse all have better things to do than hang out with the listening masses. But don't fret. Flicted and I love you. I mean, really love you, man. Possibly Jennifer, too. Not that we may possibly love Jennifer, just that she may possibly be there, I think.
But
anyway.
But we might love the intern.
Yes.
Which might or might not be Jennifer.
So, if you're one of those people who are scared to death of meeting Jaylee in a fluorescently lit corridor between server rooms, then you can breathe easy this Friday, March 2nd at Tropioca. Things will probably get started around 7:30 and go into the last Geek is Left. Tropioca is located at 2808 Milam at Drew in Midtown Houston. You can hit www.tropioca.com for a menu and driving directions. And now that Dwight's gone, we can start having some fun. That's right, trivia's back. So if you want to get in on seeing who can answer the fastest, this would be the time to frantically run to your computer, hit the geekradio.com site, and log into IRC. And here it goes with some trivia questions. They're going to go in chronological order from 91 all the way up through 98. The first one is, what snappier name did the tiny online outfit Quantum Computer Services adopt in 1991? What snappier name did the tiny online outfit Quantum Computer Services adopt in 1991? It's one of the big ones.
Snappy names?
America Online.
Wow.
Yeah. We will actually...
I had no idea they were anything before they were America Online.
Yeah?
The card doesn't lie.
Card should not lie. What former auto exec launched e-bike to sell folks on electric bikes? They should name it Lee Bike, maybe, to sell folks.
Lee Iacocca?
Yeah, Lee Iacocca.
Thanks for the
know about that. And what tech giant came up
with... Technology Lee Bikes.
What tech giant came up with a universal serial bus, USB, to carry computer data? Who invented that?
Sun Microsystems.
No, Intel. I'm not keeping an eye on IRC to see if anyone in there, but there's a delay. Things get a little bit more interesting now. What time does the W32.MARIJUANA, I think that spells marijuana, computer virus interrupt
420.
To suggest
420.
You take a break?
420.
Wow, do you guys know that? That is correct. All right, this one's a little bit closer to home. What computer virus strikes every March 6th on the birthday of a famed painter?
Michelangelo virus.
That's it. That was one of the first big viruses to kind of get any kind of notoriety in its own t-shirt.
Although a place I worked had a lot of experience with the Black Knight virus.
Huh?
long time ago.
Putting it or spreading it or getting rid of it or...
They had banyan vines. And, yeah, they had to shut down the whole network. Went to every computer by hand, the IT guys did, because I was in IT at the time. And they had to boot off this to wipe it. The next day, everybody came in, turned on their computers, and they missed one. And so they all got infected again.
All right, well, this is easy. What term from a Monty Python sketch was first used by netizen Joel Furr to describe mass emails?
Spam, spam,
spam, spam.
Exit spam. Spam,
spam, bacon, spam.
I love spam. I'll have the spam.
Oh, I love it.
Now, this is kind of odd. What power source was Eric Raymond the first to use to fly a plane across North America in 1993?
Himself.
Himself. That is correct. Now, that's solar power, and that would be ESR. I'm assuming Eric S. Raymond,
he's
if you know Raymond.
Somebody's son.
Yeah, there's a cool comic out there. It's called Everybody Loves Eric Raymond, and it the whole premise is that it's Linus Torvalds, Richard Stallman, and Eric Raymond, and they're all roommates in a house, and it's worth checking out. Everyone loves Eric Raymond. What graphic adventure by Rand and Robin Miller did PC Computing dub the first New Age game?
What now?
Okay. What graphic adventure by Rand and Robin Miller? I think they were husband and wife.
Mist.
Yes, Mist. Mist, Mist for me. That just, it locked up my sound card. And
oh, yeah. That totally wouldn't work on my computer. And I remember.
They're brothers.
Oh. Or both, if they lived in, like, Mississippi or one of those kind of states. I don't ask questions about stuff like that. They put out good, they don't really put out good software. Okay, moving on. What computer classic sent players to Phobos to blast Spectres, Lost Souls, and Cacodemons?
Laser Suit Larry.
No, before that. One of the big first-person shooter games that wasn't the big first-person shooter game.
Castle Wolfenstein?
Doom.
Doom. We got a couple more. We're almost there. This is for Dwight.
Okay.
What early PDA's poor handwriting recognition led reviewers to call it Apple's electronic Edsel?
Egg Freckles Newton.
That would be the Newton. And how many of every 100 posts to UUNET were determined to be spam in 1997 at its spammiest? How many of every 100 posts to UUNET? It's like use group stuff.
99
out of 100?
Yeah.
No. See, this is how mad, this is how bad we've been, just drug over the coals. No, that's right. 99. It's like, wow. Oh, that's horrible. 90, maybe somewhere getting that much. I thought it was going to be like 1 or something.
99
like
out of every 100 posts to use.
No, it was 97 because 95, 96 was when things really started falling apart.
It's when all the alt binaries.
And then after 97, everybody gave up on UNET and Usenet, and nobody uses it anymore.
We got three more. This is kind of cool. Which of the original 13 U.S. states was the first to display its official website on license plates? Which of the original 13 U.S. states
Rhode
was the
Island.
First to display? No. Afflicted?
Vermont.
Peter?
Virginia?
Pennsylvania.
Oh, because, you know, Pennsylvania.com or .gov. It's really good.
Pennsylvania.state.gov. Too long for the license plate. What company altered the Handycam? This was a big buzz. I remember this. What company altered the Handycam after its infrared night shot feature was found to see
Sony
during the day? Everybody. Y'all were on that almost as fast as you were on the 420.
I've never heard of that.
No, it did that?
Yeah.
Well, I ate them, and I never thought to try that.
There are actually some people selling filters to connect to the some of the more recent Sony cams that will reaccomplish that.
Those things were pretty hot on in certain circles. Those things were, people would pay a lot of money for those.
For the
There's the whole through skirt.
I had a friend that was kind of in that culture a little bit, and those things were a hot commodity.
So this is also falling along in poor taste. What Texas city, not Texas City, but what Texas city drew protests for an automated webcam pointing down at the plaza below from its sixth floor museum?
Oh,
I didn't know about this.
Dallas.
And for those of y'all that can't get it, that's probably the view that Lee Harvey Oswald or whoever else.
Yeah, from the
know.
Book depository.
I remember that. Yeah,
that's the book depository.
Story Dylan.
And
all right, well, that's that for your first week of fun without Dwight. And that's that for Barrett Time.
All right. You're listening to Technology Bites here on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
I'm Dwight's sense of Max Shame ego.
I'm Dwight's. I'm Kenner's. I'm Dwight's stretched turtleneck. It's that whole channel thing that's messing with me.
I'm Dwight's tongue tied
alter ego. Yeah. All right.
So is this Fight Club Bites or what?
It's Dwight Club. The first rule of Dwight Club is we don't talk about Dwight Club or something. All right, well, I think we're funny. 713-526-573. When are you going? You're going, do we want to tell everybody?
Yeah, we'll tell people. I'll be gone for two shows. The first one, I think I'm going to be in The Hague in the Netherlands, and the second show I'll be in London. So hopefully I'll be able
Alexander
to get in.
Hague?
Huh? The
Alexander Hague?
Alexander Hague.
Tried for crimes against computers.
Or the English language.
I need to put you... So that's what's the date on that again?
That would be...
March?
It's going to be March.
Okay.
It's
around St. Patrick's Day, as I recall.
Yes. You know what? It's going to be, as my calendar pulls up, it's going to be, I'll be gone for the March 14th show and the 21st show.
The iCalendar should be called I Forget.
iCal. I Forget. I don't really use it.
Okay. Same. All right. Who's up? We're going to start taking your calls again, so I know you're happy to hear that because we're just talking too much. Who's up?
We've got Wes.
Wes, you're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I really appreciate your program. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling in and listening.
Oh, you bet. Every week. I have a laptop that I got something called Wingding.
Wingding.
Yeah, I'm sure you're familiar with it, but I sure wasn't. And in an effort to try to fix it, I think I compounded the problem. But after a couple of days, I found somebody that did know what the problem was and did go into it and correct it. But the result was on my taskbar, the icons are all gone into past events instead of the current events. And another little glitch, the touchpad, I go in and disable it. I disabled it initially a long time ago when I first got the laptop a year and a half ago, but it came back to life. And every time I turn the computer on, I have to go in there and disable it again. And those are the only, you know, glitches I've found so far. And I was wondering if you could tell me, I've gone on the internet trying to find a cure for the past events to try to bring them back to current events, all the icons that are gone.
What do you mean past events, current events? That doesn't, that's
okay,
not...
Okay, you go into your taskbar, bring up your properties, and you it shows you the icons that come up, you know, when you're, you know, doing different things, you know, that that pop up on your taskbar. Well, they're all, you know, you've got two different categories in there. One's called current events, one's called past events. I've gone on the internet and I've, you know, there's a number of people that have the same problem, but I can't find anybody that knows how to fix it or how to bring them back to current events.
I'm still lost on that because I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, right-click on your taskbar.
Uh-huh.
Bring up, you know, that window. I don't have my computer in front of me.
Right, I got properties, lock the taskbar, task manager, show the desktop, windows vertically, blah, 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 view.
Okay, I think it's advanced, but you
is it in the properties?
Yeah, if you right-click on that, bring up the window, and then it's in the it's on that little window. I don't have my computer in front of me to,
I understand.
You know, to tell you exactly what to do.
So, but you're telling me, like, what kind of events is it reporting to you?
Well, it's the icons that are supposed to come up on your taskbar when different things are happening.
Right. Okay. So, like, when you open up Word or you open up Internet Explorer, you see those on the taskbar.
Well, and your internet provider and your virus protection. I mean, all kinds of stuff.
Right.
You know. Okay, all those things, and you can hide them, or you can have them always showing, you know. Okay, well, all those are gone, you know, and they're in a little category there called past events. You've got two little categories, one's called current events, one's called past events. And I wish
you had a computer in front of you because
I'm turning it on right now, and
I have never, ever... see, I'm really not getting my handle on it. But I'll tell you this, while you're waiting for your computer to start up, I mean, if you got infected with some type of virus and there was some damage done to the computer, sometimes that can be really, really hard to recover from. And one thing you might try, you might try creating a new user on this computer. It's Windows XP, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
You might try creating a new user. Do you know how to do that?
Yes, uh-huh.
Create a new user, put it in the administrator group, and then log out of the PC and then log into that new user and see if the taskbar looks like it's working properly for that, because you might just have a corrupted user profile.
Hmm.
I mean, it would be worth it to see if this problem persists across, you know, the whole system or not.
Okay, now I got my computer up.
Okay.
Double-click, you know, your right-click on your taskbar, bring up the task and start menus properties. Okay, and then go down to the bottom there where it says customize.
Properties, customize, okay.
Okay, click on customize. Okay, you see where it says current items.
Current items, okay.
I'm sorry, yeah, I was doing it from memory, I'm sorry.
That's current all right, I see it now. Items. Current items and past items.
Yeah, okay, everything except Dell QuickSet, Dell Support, and my ad watch from my AdAware SE Plus, everything is on past items.
So all of them are on past items. You've got nothing on current items.
I've only got five different things on current items.
And then when you hit the button that says restore defaults, it doesn't do anything.
No, doesn't do it.
All right. Yeah, I don't know what controls that. To tell you the truth, I'm going to pop over to IRC and see if anybody knows.
No.
I obviously
everything I've been able to look for on the internet, nobody knows.
Right. So what I would say is that it might be worth your while. I would see if the same thing holds true under another user, if you created a new user on the computer.
Okay.
And, you know, and log into that. And if it does not, if the problem does not exist when you log into that user, then I would say you need to bring over the user info from your old user, like documents from the My Documents folder, your favorites, your email, and stuff like that, and just use the new profile.
Okay. Another thing with that, you know, touchpad, you know, keep popping up, and I disable it, apply it, okay it, but it still keeps coming back. And those are the only, you know, there's only a couple of glitches I found because this just happened the other day.
Right.
And what I was thinking, also, if you could walk me through step by step, you know, and just tell me basically, you know, in simple terms, how do I, you know, take everything out of this computer into an external hard drive and then wipe this disk and reinstall everything and then put back what I want and then
I'll do the best I can. I've only got about 45 minutes left in the show to
if you just give me the instructions,
I'll give you the basics of it, and we'll go from there.
All right, thanks.
If you open up the My Computer icon and you go to your C drive and you go to the Documents and Settings folder, you'll see all the user profile folders.
Okay.
And there'll be one for whatever main account, whatever account it is that you're using on this computer, and you can double click on it, and you'll see a folder called the way you can tell if you're in the right one, you double click on that user and you double click on the desktop folder under that user, and you'll see if you see your desktop items or not. That'll tell you you're in the right place. But really, all you really need, if you back up your computer, are any music files, if you have those.
No, I don't have any of those.
Any documents, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, anything like that. Do you have anything like that you need to
save? Basically, what I have is documents, pictures, and the pictures are primarily print screens that I've done, you know, surfing.
Do you have those stored someplace logically, like your My Pictures folder?
Yes.
Okay. So if you take that My Documents folder, if that's where all your documents and your pictures and stuff are,
yes.
Take your My Documents folder, copy that to another drive.
Okay. And
That'd be one thing. If you dig around, do you care about your bookmarks?
Yes, very much so.
All right. So if you drill down, if you go C:// documents and settings / whatever username, there's a folder there called favorites. And you can open that up you'll see all of your favorites.
Will the same thing apply for Firefox?
No, not necessarily. I don't know where Firefox... Firefox, you could probably export your favorites in Firefox.
You can save it as XML, and you can bring it in other programs.
If you do a Google search on backup Firefox favorites, you'll find out. You'll get some easy instructions on that. So get that. That'll give you all your documents and your pictures, your Firefox bookmarks. Are you using Thunderbird for your mail?
No.
Are you using Outlook?
Outlook Express, and I want to save all my email too.
So you'll probably there's a manual way to get that data, and it's kind of involved. But do a Google search on backup Outlook Express email, and you'll find a Microsoft page that tells you how to do it. Outlook Express is not super easy to do it with.
Okay.
There are third-party utilities and programs available that will do it. Or you can read up on how to locate the folder that has your mail files and address book in it, copy that, and then you'll have to look at another document that tells you how to bring that back in to Outlook Express once you get that reset up. And that would be the primary things that you're worried about. If you can back up your mail, your favorites, and your documents and pictures, you'll have most of everything you want.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I really want to say.
And that's all pretty much, the favorites is easy enough. Just do a research on backup Firefox favorites. Okay. Outlook Express is a little bit more complex, but do a Google search on how to backup Outlook Express email. Just backup Outlook Express, and you'll find tons of pages that describe it. And then your My Documents folder is easy enough to copy over to another drive.
Okay. And then when I buy a CD to wipe the hard drive, and then reinstall my...
Well, you don't have to buy anything to wipe the hard drive necessarily. Is this a name brand computer like a Dell or an HP or something?
Exactly, a Dell.
Okay. Dell should have come with a recovery CD or a restore CD.
Yes.
And if you take that restore CD and you put it into the CD drive and you restart the computer, it'll boot off that CD. It'll take you through the process of restoring the computer back to the way it was when you bought it.
And I don't have to wipe the hard disk first?
No, it'll wipe it for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it'll take you through that process and wipe it for you.
And it'll take off everything that's on there and then just...
Yeah,
just
it'll give you a clean. It'll give you a clean start.
Oh, okay.
And just like it was when you bought it.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll save me a little bit of time.
Yeah. Okay.
When I have to, and do I have to reinstall the other disk that came with it too? Everything that all the recovery disks that came with it.
Well, how many recovery disks did it come with?
Word Perfect and I think there was a couple more.
Well, you'll have to when you do the initial recovery with the main recovery CD, then when you get it up there, look to see if you're missing any of that stuff, and if you are, then just use those disks to reinstall it.
Okay. All right. And is there anything else I need to think about?
Well, cross your fingers, think about what you can't, think about what you can't live without and what you're going to do if you end up losing it. So.
Yeah, I've already been chewing on that.
Yeah.
And
another option is to buy a new hard drive and have that installed and restore to that and have your old hard drive set up as a secondary drive, and then you can just copy files off as you need them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so if you were to get a new hard drive installed into this computer as the primary drive and leave the current drive as a secondary drive, it would just show up as your D or your D drive, and then you could go over there and just pull files off as you needed them.
Would it stay inside the laptop, or is there enough room for that?
Oh, it's a laptop? Never mind. I thought it was a desktop.
Oh, no.
If it's a laptop, it's not as good a solution. Now, you'll need to back the stuff up.
That's what I was thinking. It'd be nice if I could take that hard drive out of there and put it in another box.
You could conceivably take it out and put it into an enclosure. They make USB drive enclosures that you can put a laptop hard drive in and set it up as a secondary drive. So you could still do it. It's just going to cost you more money and a little bit more difficult to accomplish. But anyway, Wes, I hope that gives you some idea of where to go. And
yeah, it does.
And it does. We appreciate your call tonight.
I appreciate the advice, and you guys. I really appreciate you being there every week, and I appreciate Jay and Dwight's articles every Tuesday, too. I read them every Tuesday.
Well, thank you, Wes. Have a great night.
You too. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Way to not cut the collar off, Barrett. Very proud of you.
I'm getting this down after a year and a couple months. Finally, it's starting to sink in.
a year and a couple of months. It's been longer than that.
Like you've been gone that long?
You're like a baby. I think you're older than that.
I'm a newbie. This whole phone thing. It's analog stuff.
Oh, right. Well, taking over the phones?
Yeah. Peter hasn't been gone that long, has he? Just a little over a year? I don't know. Time.
How long have you been in San Antonio? How long was since the last time you were in the studio, Peter?
Oh, wow. That's been a while.
Your banishment.
Your exodus.
Yeah, I know that I stopped being regularly... Now, regularly on the show in the studio in like January 2005, I think.
Yeah,
somebody was doing the phones.
Yeah. Don't ask me to estimate anything, is what that should tell
you. He can't pronounce today's. He can't pronounce dates
or years or numbers or just yeah.
He plays a smart guy on the radio, and even that, he doesn't do very well. So.
And what with us already being in the year 1977 and all.
That was not the year of the suburban you drove from San Antonio. All right, who's up next by length of hold?
If I can do this hard math here. One, two, three.
Some
George is going to be next.
George, you're on the air.
Hey there.
Hey.
First of all, to the guy who called earlier who wants to back up his AOL stuff.
Yeah.
It's very simple, but it's a four-step process. It's very simple, but you need to go to your drive C and hit your program folder. Once you hit your program folder, you find a folder that says AOL. Click on that. And within AOL, you see something called Organize. Within Organize, you see a file that looks like your sign-on name. And that's what you need to save. Save out to a disk or a CD. Sometimes if you save it out to a CD, it changes the attributes and you have trouble finding it back over. But I find it best to save it like to a thumb drive or to an external drive. And that's what you need to save in order to save your AOL mail.
Okay, thanks.
And also, I have an external hard drive enclosure, and in it I have a Magster ATA 100 drive, and I have another enclosure I'm not using. I want to put a drive in that. But I'm looking around at drives these days. I'm looking to see things like Ultra ATA 100, SATA, and all this kind of stuff. And I wonder, ATA 100 versus Ultra ATA 100, are they compatible? With the Ultra ATA 100 drive working my computer, working my on an external hard drive.
On an external hard drive, I mean, if you get the right enclosure, I would imagine it'll work just fine because the external drives just connect using USB or FireWire.
Right.
So you just need to find an enclosure that accepts. You know, and it should tell you on the box whether or not it accepts Ultra ATA drives or not.
Okay, suppose I want to put one in my computer. Is that,
what is your computer currently?
That I'm not sure how, it's one from PowerSpec. I'm not sure what the motherboard I have in that kind of specification, but I know at least I'm using ATA 100 with it now. Is there a big difference between Ultra ATA and just plain old ATA 100?
I'm not up to speed on all the ATA specifications.
Yeah. Okay, it does get kind of confusing. Now they're coming out with ATA 133, and it's just getting kind of weird. Okay,
I use a lot of Ultra, you know, the enhanced IDE, and my new computer probably has...
Just go SATA.
Huh?
Just go all SATA.
All SATA, serial ATA.
That stuff's pretty nice. I got my first handful of SATA drives just maybe a month or two ago, and the hot swappable is just nice, and yeah. I'm having to mess around with stuff like that. But you should be okay. Usually Ultra ATA refers to the 100 mode, and the thing is you've got to have the UDMA stuff tripped on in your BIOS, and some of the cheaper, like the power specs and things like that, they may or may not do that. I know how to check it under Linux. There's a test parm thing you can run. I don't know how to do it under Windows, unfortunately.
Did you say your computer's a name brand or no?
PowerSpec.
Yes, PowerSpec from Micro Center.
You might just go down to Micro Center, too, and talk to them. Or, you know, I mean, you're going to want to take a look at what you have in terms of a controller and then just tell them and shop your drive that way.
Okay. All right. Thank you, then.
All right. Thanks for your call, George. I haven't shopped hard drives. I'm still IDE on the brain. I'm thinking about getting a new drive for my current computer, and I think it's probably still enhanced IDE.
Yeah, if you've got a free PCI slot, I mean, the adapters are cheap. You can pick them up for $20-$25.
For the Ultra ADA?
Yeah, for the Ultra, SATA.
For SATA.
Yeah, and if you really want, like, the fast burst rates, like the ones that'll do, like, the, 300 megabyte per second or something like that, they're not that much more. It's pretty reasonable right now. It's worth
SATA drives have gotten common enough that the price difference is you're not paying much extra at all to get that instead of a Ultra ATA.
Yeah,
two times we're hurting for Dwight. Dwight would have known the answer to that question. Easy. He's the hardware guy.
No, his new answer is now. What do you mean a new hard drive? You just throw away the whole laptop and you get another Mac. That's he's rinsed himself clean of all the upgrade questions.
Jennifer's going to take his place. Jennifer, the intern? Yeah, go ahead. Pull up a chair.
Thanks.
Let's let Jennifer, the intern, sit here at the table and get a microphone. And
offer no good advice whatsoever.
You did the math for me and told me who's got a headphone.
No. Give her a set of headphones.
Yeah, all right. Four. It's Dennis.
Dennis.
Right. Hello.
Hello, Dennis. You're on the air.
How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing great. How are you?
Great. I'm very good. Thanks for taking my call. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Okay, here's what's going on. I bought a new little setup around Christmas time. I have a new Mac Mini, and I have a Samsung flat panel. And often when I turn it on, the flat panel doesn't want to come on completely. When it comes on completely, the screen comes up right. But often the screen, I just get this little box up in the corner that says digital and analog, and the screen is
right,
dark.
Right, it's not detecting any signal.
Yes. So often what I do is I'll just unplug the Mac, I'll plug it back in, I will turn it on, and immediately try to turn the monitor on. And this seems to be the only way that it ever is on, and it works about 30% of the time. I'm wondering if y'all could maybe...
Well, it sounds to me like the monitor is having a problem.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like a hardware problem because, I mean, if it's... The monitor has to detect signal or, you know, so it's, chances are it might just be a... It could be a faulty cable. How old is the monitor?
It's fairly new.
How new?
I'd say it's 4 months old.
There's probably under warranty. Where'd you buy it from? Best Buy.
Yes.
Do you have access to another computer?
Yeah.
Have you tried the monitor on the other computer to see if it would work normally?
I have not. We've got some PCs at the office, so I could take.
Well,
the
take
monitor.
The monitor. Since it's a flat panel, they're pretty easy to transport. You know, just protect it, wrap it in a sheet or something.
Sure.
And lay it down in the back seat. But try hooking it up to another computer, turning that computer on and off, and see if it behaves properly.
Yeah, I would say flip monitors, flip computers, flip cables.
Yeah.
And see if you can isolate what's happening.
If it, you know, use all the same cables and everything, if it does not have the same problem when you go to work, then chance that it's something with the PC. But I'm thinking...
I'm using a Mac Mini.
Right. Okay, well, it's still a PC, technically. I didn't.
It is, okay.
Yeah, I mean, personal computer. I'm using the term as personal computer. But
I see.
So it's probably something wrong with the computer. But I'm thinking it's the monitor. Like, the monitor's just not responding properly, getting the proper signal. So either a loose cable, defective cable, or possible defective monitor. But you want to find out quickly. So if you take it to work and it does the same thing on one of these other computers, then I would take it to Best Buy and see about getting it swapped out under warranty.
Okay.
If it's still under warranty.
I have one other question for
you. Sure.
I just use my little rig here to surf the internet. That's all I do.
Uh-huh.
And I have absolutely no virus protection whatsoever. I just have a dial-up at house.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was under the impression that Max possibly didn't
Max
require.
I keep forgetting you have a Mac. So, yeah, you're not really in the kind of
and
jeopardy.
I'm not going to any questionable websites, if you know what I mean. I'm not.
Right.
Well,
Well, I mean, the thing about viruses, and it, again, you're not that susceptible using a Macintosh. Viruses come a number of different ways. You don't have to visit questionable sites. You can get an email that looks legitimate, accidentally open an attachment or whatever. But chances are, at this time, the way things kind of shake out, you really... are you running any antivirus on your Mac?
I'm running Mac. That's kind of redundant.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. So most Mac users I know do not run antivirus software on their Macintosh computers.
I don't.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
So, yeah, you're probably fine.
Okay. Well, that's all I got for you guys, and I appreciate you taking my call.
All right, Dennis.
Have a nice evening.
You too. Thank you very much. All right. About 30 minutes left in the show, give or take a few minutes for us to, you know, talk about how great we are and say goodbye at the end of the show.
I don't run the antivirus software on my Mac.
Okay. Moving on. Who do we have up next?
A little more regular with Don here.
Hi, Don, you're on the air.
You guys are great, and I said, don't have to say any more about it.
Well, thanks.
I got a couple of questions real quick. Number one, do you know a good web designer for a small business that doesn't charge an arm and a leg?
Peter, have you reduced your arm and a leg prices yet?
I think my prices are probably pretty good. They weren't arm and a leg in the first place. So.
All right, we'll see. Maybe out of... I don't have anybody I can recommend. The only web designer I trust is Peter. So email Peter at geekcom.com with what your needs are.
Okay.
And, you know, you can get his contact info off the Geek Radio website, but that's what he does.
Okay.
And,
If you think about some people, go and look at some websites they've done.
Yeah.
Like, make sure you can get them to give you a couple of sites.
When you say an arm and a leg, I mean, it's kind of, it's relative, right? Because...
industry standard's down to three toes and a finger.
It just depends on what it is you're trying to do. Yeah, I mean, some websites are expensive because what the... requirements are take a lot of effort.
Really good graphic designer, a lot of stuff in the back end.
No,
going
I don't need all that. I just need something simple, and just put like a Visa MasterCard logo on it, and just something about my business.
Do you need a shopping cart?
Yeah, maybe.
Do you need
I don't need all that.
Do you need
really.
People to be able to buy stuff online? Or
that wouldn't hurt, but I'm probably not going to do a whole lot of that.
Well,
yeah, see, just kind of, it depends, because you can have something that looks very professional. I mean, it depends on what you like, because you can also find somebody who went and took a web class at a junior college and doesn't really know anything beyond what they learned in the class that'll charge you $250 for 5 web pages or whatever, and it won't look... really good to most people who use the internet a lot. It'll look pretty amateur.
Right.
It'll look really cool to a MySpace user, though. So it's all about knowing your target audience.
Okay. You can also look,
on this Vista program, I was thinking about buying a new computer, but which version would you get? I don't use that much in my business, but except for, just using like Microsoft Word or Works or doing spreadsheets, something like that. Or
one of the home versions should be fine. Home Premium is pretty nice.
Okay.
I don't know what the current consumer computers are being sold with, but it's probably whatever comes on the PC, if you're just using it mostly for your home or home business, I think that the Home Premium would be a fine version for that.
What's your overall rating or likes and dislikes about Vista?
Some of the stuff I like about it is that it protects the computer from the user. If you don't know what you're doing, it really, can prevent a lot of damage from spyware or from making bad decisions on it.
That takes all the fun out of it.
But that's also one of the things I dislike about it, is that it kind of protects it from the user, because it doesn't run natively in administrative mode. So there's some hoops you have to jump through if you're getting down to the nuts and bolts of the operating system. and I find myself butting my head against that wall once in a while I'm using my Vista computer, just trying to, you know, do certain things, run certain applications, copy files and so forth.
Okay. One other thing, if I'm, is it possible to, I heard you talking a lot about reinstalling systems. Like, I've downloaded some programs off the internet. I don't have the CDs. Is it possible to save those and reinstall them on the new computer or after the reinstall?
Well, there's a couple of options. One, if you downloaded them from the internet, you could go re-download them.
That's I'm on dial-up, so I don't want to wait
right,
3 hours.
Right, so if you're on dial-up, obviously. The other thing... It's difficult to move an application from one computer to another.
Well, what about if you're just putting it back in the same computer? The computer's just gotten so...
That's going to be even harder because there are tools. There's like PC Mover. LapLink makes a program called PC Mover that is designed to connect two computers together so that you get all the programs and files from the old computer onto the new computer.
Well, what if you're just...
I understand what you're doing is you're going to take one computer and wipe it and start over.
Yes.
So what you have to be able to do is, I don't know, look at PC Mover to see if it has an option to back up to, say, DVD or to an external hard drive or something.
But if you were just going to use your CD burner, there's no way to extract that whole program.
No, because the program itself... not only copies files, but it makes registry entry changes, and it copies some files into the Windows directory and the system directory, as well as the application directory. So it's very dicey trying to move a program from one, you know, take it off the computer, rebuild the computer, put it back in. That's what the install media is for.
Okay.
The install media is designed to take a look at the operating system, and then put the files and make the changes that it needs to make so that the program will work on that operating system.
Mm-hmm.
So if you didn't save a copy of the install files that you downloaded, or you just installed them by running them from the web page, then you're kind of in a bad position.
Okay. Well, I figured if anybody would know, you did.
Well, you could get a, you know, are you just not eligible for broadband in your area? Or high
no.
No? Is it a laptop or a desktop?
Desktop.
Okay. Well, maybe go borrow somebody's internet connection.
Well, I could just kind of go around and see if anybody has an open wireless.
There you go. Or driving with a desktop.
All you need is just an antenna to pick it up.
All you need is a wireless card to pick it up.
A wireless card?
Yeah.
You don't have to have
I'm not advocating this, so I don't want to go down this road too far, but it's called war driving, and it's not legal.
Oh, okay.
Although with a desktop, you might need, you know, a power inverter in your car.
That's true. I was thinking maybe more along the lines of taking your desktop to some public Wi-Fi place or borrowing a laptop and going to, like, you know, Starbucks or whatever, using that to download the files, burn them to CD, and then take it over to your desktop and reinstall them.
Or finding a friend that has broadband.
And having them download it. Yeah.
Gotcha.
All right.
Thank you very much for your help. Enjoy your show.
Thank you very much. Have a great evening. All right. 15 minutes, give or take, left in the show. 4 calls in the queue. It could go either way. So far, great calls tonight. Thanks for everybody listening. We're going to talk to Frank Ryan, Scooter, and Margie here, depending on, I think it's going to be Margie first by length of hold to save Barrett the math.
Thanks, Jay.
Hi, Margie. You're on the air.
Hello. yes, I have a question. And you guys have answered lots of questions for me in the past, and I really appreciate it. I'm considering buying an iPod or an MP3 player, and I just wondered, you know, what the pros and cons versus a non-Apple and an Apple, you know, an iPod would be, you know?
Well... I mean, I don't think you're going to hear anybody...
I mean, I've heard that you're more restricted with the iPod.
What is your... Let me ask you this. What are you going to use the iPod for? Boy, that's a new question. what are you going to use the iPod...
My music on it.
Music, right? Where are you going to get your music from?
Well, I'm going to get some of it from my CDs.
Okay.
I'm going to get some of it by buying stuff on the internet.
Okay. So, as far as, like, your CDs, you know, all of almost any of your MP3 players are going to let you take the music off your CDs and put it onto the MP3 player. iPods use iTunes. Other MP3 players use Windows Media Player. It just depends.
Well, I have Windows Media Player on my computer right now.
We all do.
I don't.
Except, well, I'm sorry. All Windows users have Windows Media Player on their PC. Let me be more specific. But at any rate, they're two different formats, you know. Windows Media Player uses WMA file, rip it to a WMA file, and only MP3 players that can handle WMA files will be able to use that music library. So really all I'm saying is that as far as your existing music library, you'll be able to pull those music files off and put it onto the MP3 player of your choice. Doesn't matter.
Right. Okay.
So that's not an issue.
Okay.
Where I'm going with this is that different MP3 players allow you to use different services. Like Zune, for example, the Windows or the Microsoft media player doesn't interface with iTunes. iTunes is one of the more popular, bigger music libraries, probably one of the more reasonably priced. Did you want to...
Oh, I have a question, though, about iTunes.
Okay, hold on. Let me finish dealing with her here real quick. And then
it might help her.
All right. Jennifer would like to interject.
All right.
Isn't there a thing about iTunes where you can only burn songs a certain amount of times?
No, that's like, they're a little bit restrictive on the DRM stuff, but right now Steve Jobs is calling for no DRM across the music industry, so I would not think that's going to stay in there. You can only burn X amount, what the number is, X amount of the exact same CD to where you're not mass producing them, but what if you destroy that playlist and recreate it with the same things, it doesn't know any better.
Okay, sorry, Margie.
Okay.
That's all right. So
what about movies or any of that? Is it just music or do you...
Just music.
So the videos don't really appeal to you so much?
No.
Well, I mean, it doesn't for me. Do you have a price range?
No.
I'm sorry?
I'm a novice.
Do you have a price range?
What kind of... No. How much music do you think you might have?
I don't know what I need. I know.
Okay, how many CDs in your current CD library?
Well, let's just say 350.
350, okay.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have any trouble putting that entire library onto most current MP3 players out there of any caliber. How much money? Is money no object?
So how many gigs then are we talking about?
30.
Well, I mentioned that to a guy at the Apple store tonight, and he looked at me like, he said, what are you going to do, start a radio station?
Well, that's what you get for going to an Apple store.
Those Mac users are morons.
Then why should I buy an iPod?
Well, I mean, certainly iPod is a great device. The form factor on the iPod, and I've got an iPod. Most people I know that have MP3 players, they have iPods of one form or another. They're nice to use. They're pleasant to have. People think they're attractive. I mean, they're...
ton of accessories.
They're incredible. I mean, you can go broke buying all the things that add on to them.
And, I mean, they are the standard. I mean,
it's kind of like the industry standard.
Everyone's trying to find an iPod killer because iPod's the thing to unthrone right now.
Okay, all right. Well, what about this other format, OGG?
That's OGG.
OGG-Vorbis?
Yeah, OGG-Vorbis. The cool thing is that MP3, when it first came out, that's kind of what like made file sizes small in music and what really got music trading out there, but someone else owns the patent to MP3. So a lot of like free software developers said, hey, how can we get around that? And one of the things is OGG-Vorbis, and it works a lot like MP3. A lot of the players, like Winamp, plays it, I think, even...
Okay, let's go back even a step on that. See, how much of an audio file are you? Are you one of those people that has a really incredible stereo at home because you can listen to the nuances of how it's...
I'm not one of those people.
All right, so the format of your music is not going to matter. There are people that will argue that OGG compression gets you, you know, more music on your disc with less loss of audio quality. But, you know, you got to have an incredible ear to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So... The format's not going to matter so much. If you're buying iTunes, you know, I don't want to be sound like a Macintosh commercial or an Apple commercial, but iTunes has a very reasonable, very well-stocked library of music you can buy. Chances are, out of your 350 CDs you already have, you probably have most things you care about. You know, so you have to think about where you want your new music to come from and how much music of that you're going to buy. If you're going to spend an incredible amount of money, you might want to shop around for... you can use any service on the iPod. You can buy from Napster. You can buy from whatever online music store you want to and put that on your iPod. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the two cool things that I think might make a difference to you is that iPod's not going to go anywhere. Apple's not going to go anywhere. I bought a lot of early on MP3 players that they just don't support anymore. The support drives up. You know, even like from a big company like Creative or Sony or stuff like that, they go through so many iterations trying to catch up with iPod. They're not going to be around. Yeah. You can still use that old software, but when you bump up operating systems and stuff like that, you might not have that. And the other thing is, as much as, you know, iTunes can be a pain, it's nice to have all your music management stuff in one package that will sync up to your mobile device, which will be your iPod, and it does everything from, like, you know, like, keeps your ratings to smart playlists very easily, to tracks how many times you listen to songs. It does a lot of neat stuff. So if you want an end-to-end solution that you don't have to, like, get away from or mix anything else in there, the iPod might be the way to go.
All right, and so does that mean I take Windows Media Player off of my machine?
No, you just leave it alone. You just leave it alone.
Okay.
So you'll load up, you'll install iTunes.
You can install iTunes even without the iPod. I mean,
right?
You know,
you can use iTunes as a music management software. It's free. It's good. It's smart. You know, it's fine. So you'll load up iTunes. It'll interface with the device, and you know, there's a learning curve with any of it. There's a learning curve, but chances. And I'll use the same argument I use when I talk about people choosing between Mac and a PC with MP3 players. In this case, if you get stuck or need help, chances are you know an iPod user.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to say, here's what I do. Here's how I do it. And they're going to be able to help you out with it when you run into issues.
Yeah.
You're going to find tons of information on the Internet about it. So I don't see any real... The only compelling reason to go with something other than an iPod is price. There are certainly MP3 players out there that are going to do way better on price. So you can get something cheaper than an iPod. When you do that, you know, you're going to get, you know, something lesser quality, something less intuitive. The form factor, my wife picked up an iPod, and she was master of the controls and nothing flat. It's just logical. Yeah. It's intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
She can use it, and she's a bit of a technophobe, but she can use an iPod because it's just that well made.
Yeah.
I've played with other MP3 players, and they're not intuitive. They're difficult to figure out. You get stuck in the controls trying to figure out how to do your songs. They don't have very good software. So, but I don't want to go on for too long about that. I hope that helps you out, Margie, and good luck with that.
Okay.
Bye-bye. All right. Still.
I'm following your lead, though. I don't know what to do. Make me the trigger man. I don't.
About 10 minutes left in the show. I want to speed round these last batch of callers. Let's go. Who's next by length of hold?
Got Frank.
Frank, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. You were talking earlier about one of your friends who was having problems with her Mac, and she could no longer access her email because she changed something.
Yeah.
Most likely what she did was change the name of her hard drive.
Really?
Yeah. Because hard drive, when you set up your Mac, usually when you put in your username, it names your hard drive to Sally or whatever you put it. And the Mac is pretty good about, you know, dragging folders here and there, but because it doesn't have a C drive per se, that just has a moniker of C, or it's not, you know, a device number 0, when you change that, everything else looks for a directory with that as the first name as the drive. And if you change your hard drive name, it mucks up all kinds of stuff. You can't find things anymore.
Okay. Well, that's certainly a possibility.
That's certainly better than, you know, going around in the command window and doing all that.
Do you want to challenge that, Barrett?
No, I don't really know how to challenge that. As far as I know, no matter what you change, and maybe Flixie can weigh in on this, no matter what you change your hard drive name to in the GUI, it's still going to, that base mount point is still going to be slash. It's still going to be your redirectory.
I've never renamed the hard drive, so I don't know for sure. But I think I've had friends rename it, and I don't remember it being creating a problem.
No.
Right. So I know that. I mean, I run other. I use both platforms, but I run a lot of stuff, and I rename my hard drive. And what happens is when it's looking for stuff that are in directories, like the programs will still run, but it can't find things because.
Well, let me ask you this: in your experience, if you rename the hard drive and you reboot the computer and you activate your email program, would you lose all your email settings? Because that's what happened to her. I mean, I don't know what if she did that or if she did something else. When she changed the name of whatever she changed the name of, now when she starts up the computer, she fires up Outlook, all the profile settings are no longer there. The mail server, all of her archived email is gone. It doesn't seem to me that renaming the hard drive would cause that, but
I just actually did that and my computer didn't crash, which it'd be totally like it to burst into flames and go down. So I renamed it.
It won't crash because other things will work, but I use Eudora, and Eudora stores my mail folder stuff in Frank/ Eudora/ blah blah blah, and now my hard drive when it goes to look when you do PWD. And I change it to Joe from Frank, it'll say Joe/ all that stuff, but it's still in the program preference file that says, oh, my files are stored in Flash and Frank.
Right, so the program settings are, so that makes sense that it could be that because we're talking about, she didn't crash the computer.
Right.
So you renamed it. Does your email still?
Everything still works. I just think that the way Unix does it's fine. I think what you might be looking at is early on, In the command prompt, sometimes depending on how your prompt is configured, it might give you the name of the hard drive and the name of your computer, your user account, dash, what have you.
Right.
Yeah, it'll say drive or machine name, colon, your username.
But as far as naming that volume or naming that physical drive,
that doesn't affect the path.
It doesn't affect the path at all.
Well,
I just know I've had that problem, right?
Okay.
I changed the hard drive name, and maybe that's what she did, and if she tries changing it back.
And I appreciate that. That's something I'll look at in terms of if that's what she did, I'll have her change it back, and it's certainly something worth looking at, and I appreciate that bit of information, Frank.
Sure. I always love help.
All right. Thanks. Have a great night.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, so we are desperately running out of time. Not that bad. About 6 minutes left in the show, but we need a few minutes to say goodbye to everybody for, all that good stuff. So who's up next?
Next up, I think the poll, we've got Scooter.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Scooter.
Right to the point. We have three computers kind of sitting in very close vicinity of each other. And I have the old computer, which has like 40 gigs. And the kids have the new computer, which has like, 360 or something. So what I want to do is I'm really afraid that my 40 gig hard drive is going to crash and I'm going to lose all my stuff. So I want to put it over to their computer and then buy a bigger hard drive and bring it back. So y'all were talking about some sort of USB crossover something last week, and could you tell me exactly how that goes and what the products are and how you can do that?
You're talking about buying a new hard drive. You're talking about actually buying a new drive or a whole new computer?
No. The computer's fine. I mean, it's running great.
All right. You just want to buy a larger disk.
No, what I want to do is transfer all my information to another computer which has room on it, and then buy
I see.
A new
so you're talking about
and,
you're
and,
talking,
and bring it back.
I got you. Okay.
Okay.
The easiest thing to do that with would be a program called LapLink.
LapLink, okay.
I mean, you could do it with just the network. I mean, conceivably, if all your computers are networked together, you could just create...
Well, they're not.
All right. So LapLink makes a program when it comes with a USB crossover cable. It allows you to load this program on the both computers.
Okay.
Set one up as the client, one up as the server, and then you can move files back and forth from one computer.
Is there hardware involved in this?
There's just one piece of USB crossover cable that comes with the software.
Okay.
Right. It's just LapLink Gold or LapLink Pro. Don't get the PC Mover. Get LapLink Pro or LapLink Gold or whatever it is. And it basically just sets up a little interface on both computers. So one is the client, one's the server. And then from one computer or the other, you can just browse the files on one computer and you can browse them on the other. And you can drag and drop just like you would with your file manager.
Okay. All right. Well, and thank you. I love your show, but I mean, it's not nearly as good as a radio drum, but,
Good night. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that you still remember, Scooter. Thanks. And I don't know, it fills me with you know, warmth and joy, but makes me feel incredibly old and tired.
I know, we do.
All right. Bye. All right. Who's up next, Miley? Oh, man, we are so desperately running out of time. Let's go ahead with Ryan. Ryan, you're on the air? Real quick.
Hey, everybody. You know, it's beyond a minute's worth of conversation.
I'm okay.
trying to do the good thing on a Dimension 2400 Dell for an 80-year-old woman who's leaving Friday morning at 4 o'clock.
Good Lord. Sorry.
Exactly. It doesn't run. It won't accept a McAfee virus scan or any downloads of the spyware stuff. Nothing sticks.
Nothing
Just
sticks.
Rattle off a couple ideas for me, and
I would say if she doesn't have any data she cares about, I would find those Dell Restore disks and just blow it away and start over.
Oh boy, tell that to an 80-year-old.
I know, that's tough. And she's leaving?
Yep. So I've got one night to do this.
Well, I mean, you could get an external hard drive, back up all of her data, her documents or email and that kind of stuff, and then blow it away and restore it and then move it back. You could probably go to get to Micro Center. I don't know. That's actually 10 o'clock. I don't think you can get a hard drive this late at night.
All right.
You can do it in the morning.
Long night for you.
No doubt.
Sorry, Ryan.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Sorry, Margo. We are out of time, Margo. If you want to email me with your question, jay@geekradio.com, jay@geekradio.com. I'll see if I can help you out offline. Sometime in the morning, I'll probably check my email. All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites here on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Heath.
I'm Clifton.
I'm Barrett.
And the Geek Gathering this Friday night. Don't forget, we got the information up on the website at geekradio.com. Barrett, Inflicted, and possibly a drunken Groove House, as well as Jennifer the intern. And Dwight won't be there, and I'll be there just for a brief time, but then I got to go. My band is playing at Fitzgerald's. If you want to come out and see that, we're opening up for a band called The Blaggards. We're playing downstairs. It's a pre-Paddy's Day plastering. So come on down. Stick around for Focus on Personal Growth. And we'll see you next Wednesday night for more Technology Bites.
International Women's Day is celebrated around the world as a day when women's global achievements are recognized and honored. KPFT joins the Pacifica Radio family on Thursday, March 8th for special International Women's Day coverage. We kick off programming at 10 a.m. with a local special produced by Bernadine Williams.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.